Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Giant Fork and Spoon. I'm your hostess, Chef Elena Alexander. No reservations are needed to be seated in our Word Cafe. It is here where we are serving up lots of hot topics about my favorite subject, food. Please subscribe to our channel as we continue to put more dishes on the podcast buffet. Our companion blog, giantforkandspoon.blogspot.com, is also available to view and subscribe. Our conversations here are sure to entice your palate, awaken your curiosity, titillate your intellect, and satisfy your cravings for food for thought. We will talk to foodies, chefs, culinary educators, and just about anybody who loves food. So, let's get you seated and get ready for today's Blue Plate Special. Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you get an opportunity to listen to our lovely broadcast. This is Chef Elena Alexander, and I've got a wonderful guest on today, a fellow alumni from a very highly highly reputation of education in Chicago, which is young, and hopefully there's some more alumni that are listening today. So, caller, go ahead and introduce yourself. All right, let's see what's going on. Let me do something really quick. I'm hoping that everything will work out. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, it says unmuted. I'm here.
There you are. I can hear you now. Great.
Yeah, I am.
Go ahead, caller, and introduce yourself to the audience.
Good afternoon, Chef, and everyone listening. My name is Maurice Miles. I am a 1985 graduate of Whitney Young High School. Currently a food truck entrepreneur, or a jerk chicken hustler, as you might want to call it.
Okay.
Let's see. So, very good friends with Chef Elena. We've collaborated on a couple of different events, and will so, I hope, in future.
Awesome, awesome. Just exactly what we need. Okay, so before we get off into our main conversation, one of the things that has touched everybody from our generation and some others as well is the passing of our beloved music genius, Prince. How are you feeling in the wake of all of that?
Like everybody else, I'm at a loss. I mean, it's just such a stunning loss to, you know, our generation. You know, Prince was really, depending on who you are, like your voice. You know, you grew up with him. You saw Prince go from being the guy running around in high heels and lingerie to the man, you know, wearing the coldest suits on the planet, walking around with a cane, you know, just growing into the artist and, you know, into his art form. So I'm like everybody else. I'm shocked. I am saddened, but I also feel very, very blessed that I was able to see him perform and see a perfectionist just, you know, put his guts into his performance for 3 whole hours. You know, and just put everything he had on the line, you know, for his fan base. So in that regard, I am still truly blessed, but I do feel a loss, though.
Yeah, I agree. I got to see him live at the Chicago Theater back in the day. And if anybody knows anything about that theater, it's a more intimate spot. It's not a stadium or things like that. You can't get 10,000 people in there. And the fact that I was so close and actually got on stage with him for, you know, a few seconds, it was just beyond measure in my mind. And it just was insane. And now, since he's passed and been cremated, it's almost like it's not real to me yet. It's really kind of, it's in the news. And it took me a good while. Like, you know, you always get these rumors. I think Left Eye Lopez from TLC, she died 6 times before she really died, according to the rumor mill. Of course, I started digging around online like, no, that can't be true. And I think I'm still kind of right there. Like, has that really happened? You know, is it real? But okay, I'm gonna move on from the purple badness. I love him dearly, and I'm not gonna choke myself up. Let's get off into our main conversation for today. You and I met at Whitney Young High School back in the day, and by the way, you're now old. you graduated a few years before me, so you're the vanguard of, you know, getting old. And a lot of the things that we do in the city and a lot of things that we do business-wise and even socially, it's very hard to throw a stone and not hit a graduate from one of our classes at Whitney Young. I go everywhere, and there's dolphins here and dolphins there. And even when, you know, you start marketing things, you get a lot of response from, you know, people you haven't seen in 20 years, but they know you and are big supports of what you are into at the moment. You guys from 85 just had a nice class reunion. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
We are the 10th graduating class from that prestigious institution, and we just celebrated a 30-year reunion this past August. It was a lovely event and truly a blessing just to see that many people come out and support during the 3 days of the event. And it culminated at the Flossmoor Country Club is where we had our gala. It was a great evening. One of the most awesome moments of that night was seeing the members of the different choirs just come in, and there was a piano in one of the rooms. And, you know, we've got musicians, we've got, producers of artists and so on. And they sat down and had a performance impromptu. And it was just an awesome experience.
Very nice. For those of you who don't know, not only is Whitney Young academically a celebrity in the realm of high school and frequently on the top 10 list of high schools across the nation, it has a huge performance art model, several dance classes, several choirs, radio, television, and those work better than our sports teams and pom-poms and all the rest of that. Yeah, those two. Whitney Young's never been really, really famous for sports, but we are famous of producing some of the best artists in the country come through those programs, and it's so vital to the life of us and so important because currently, like, I work in a school on the far south side, and they're very, very limited in music and art and creative things. They don't get to do this stuff because the funding isn't there to support these other projects. So in a big way, we were doubly blessed. I was, one of Miss Bernice's dancers, and a lot of my friends that were in that model, I still see and talk to, especially over online a lot. When you were at Whitney Young, what was your main focus?
My main focus was maintaining. It was a sobering experience because you had all these kids who were the valedictorians and salutatorians of their, super smart. And then you get there and you're used to being the person, and you are in an environment where, smarter than me, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
The academics was one thing, and that was, that was the main focus, was the academics. And just looking at the curriculum that we were privy to, at that school, a lot of folks didn't get that kind of education. They got to college.
This is true.
So, we were taking college-level courses in high school. And then, we had the performing arts. Myself, I was in the concert band and the marching band on the sports teams, which I wanted to correct you if I could.
Okay.
We've had some standouts, professionally in sports as well. Our teams have, the girls' basketball team, the boys' basketball team lately have been perennial powers in the state. Even back in the day when we were there, we did quite well in basketball and track and pom-pom and all those other kind of things. So, some folks that we went to school with, like Russell Maryland, was the number one draft pick in the NFL back in the day.
That's right. Oh, I forgot about
Katrina Adams, my classmate, who is also the president of the United States Tennis Association. You know, she played in Wimbledon, you know, so she was a super accomplished athlete, and now she's doing great things on that side of the thing. And just look at music. If you listen to the radio in Chicago, I'm sure you've heard Steve Miggy Maestro, my locker partner. locker partner. Greg
Julian
Gray, Cordell. Yeah, Cordell Johnson. We've got some great DJs, Jimmy Smith, George Jackson, Chris Avent, Frank Washington, Sean Haley, you know, Illuminae Lupitan, Rudy Jordan, Timmy McAllister. I mean, the list goes on and on. And if I left out somebody, please forgive me. On the other side, as far as vocalists are concerned, Kelly Longmire, we've got Joyce Jackson Hurley. Just some great folks that came through with Whitney Young.
Yeah. I do accept the correction on what I'm saying. But for me, it never seemed like we were, you know, big on sports in certain arenas. Yeah, we did okay. But the other high schools didn't fear playing us. You know, we were supposed to be the smarty art kids. And so if we came out football, and they were like, we got this until they found out that we had some surprises for them. It was a really great experience being there. I did opt out and graduate elsewhere beforehand. So technically, I'm not an alumni. However, my heart's always there within the Dolphin community. Lately, Maurice and I have been doing some food, you know, adventures with respect to making money in the culinary industry. And we have some plans that we'd like to expound on and, you know, all those kind of lovely things. But before you tell us about that part, Maurice, let me just put the message out there. If anybody wants to call in and ask questions, the phone number is 657-383-0717. We would love to hear from you if you are listening to us live and have any questions about anything that we speak about here. So, Maurice, tell us a little bit about what you and I have been working to accomplish on the south side of Chicago.
Well, first and foremost, we've been trying to just follow our passion, and that would be within the culinary industry. As many of you may or may not know, Chef Elena is a highly respected force in this city as far as culinary is concerned. She's a great pastry chef. Her business, Cakes by Elena, they make some of the finest cakes that you'll ever see for weddings, birthdays. I'm just being honest. She makes a banana bread that will make you want to smack your mama. Rest in peace, Mom. But still. We've just been doing some great things. I've been blessed enough to operate a food truck here over the last year or so, and we've collaborated on that venture. And we're looking to do bigger things with that. We're looking to get a bigger truck, and hopefully not only are we looking for a standalone restaurant, but also looking for an opportunity to kind of give back and assist younger folks in getting an exposure to culinary arts, not just in the kitchen, but the front of the house as well, because some folks might not be suited for the kitchen, but they might be great in a management or even an entrepreneur role. And, you know, we've kind of been through the trenches, and we know the pitfalls out there. We know what kind of attitude you have and that kind of thing. And we're looking to give that back to this next generation of, you know, not just folks, you know, from Whitney Young, but just people around the city, you know, who love, you know, food. We've got some young folks out here who are looking for direction, and we want to give them some of that and, you know, just pour back into them and just help that next generation, you know, come through and be successful.
Yeah. I'm a big supporter of higher education, but I also know that a lot of people aren't suited to go to law school or med school or even get a, you know, a PhD in philosophy. That's not what's going to feed them. That's not what's going to capture their interest, and they're not going to stay in those roles as much as, you know, myself as a parent and every other parent. You want your kid to do the best thing in the world, you know, and but sometimes you end up putting on them a moniker or a goal that they're not suited for. You know, from the time mom's pregnant, it's like, oh, this one's going to be a doctor. And then they show up and they're actually an illustrator. So the idea of trade school and culinary arts and differing types of higher education, even on the job education, has to be there, because the virtuosos are few and far between, but like a really good solid studio musician can work up until, you know, his last day and be well taken care of financially and socially. However, prep schools like Whitney Young that don't have as much in the way of art are a little harder for people to continue liking education. The Southside location that I'm currently teaching in, I see things from my kids that are both phenomenal and slightly heartbreaking. There's reading deficits, there's mathematic deficits. And when I'm teaching you how to cook, it's very difficult to overcome those things. So I ended up, and nutritional, oh my God, there's so many nutritional deficits, it's not even funny. I know we were all teenagers once, and we all ate junk food, and some of us still do. However, they have no equation in their head that this is going to cause me problems later in life. They have none of that. So it's a constant kind of struggle to get them up and running. But once they get up and running, they're like, you know, a baby foal. Once that baby's born and learns how to stand up, the next thing they got to do is run. And I really feel that if I could even just catch a few that won't just lay down and roll over, that we're actually getting somewhere. Again, the phone number in is 657-383-0717. So, Mr. Maurice, we talked halfway a little bit about future planning for our collaboration and some other things going on. Can you tell the audience your vision and how long you think it's going to get us, you know, going to take us to get there?
With everything, it's a day-by-day thing. And the thing that I enjoy about our collaboration is we're planners, you know, because we would, you know, it's always best to have a plan and not an opportunity than an opportunity come up and you have no plan.
Sure.
And we're looking very near future as far as some of the things that we would like to do. But I want to circle back really quick to that piece we were talking about education, because as she said, you know, we're great, you know, supporters of higher education. But looking at this society of children that are coming up, we have to be honest. You know, we might see them in a classroom setting, but you never know what that kid is going through at home. And if you listen to certain parts of society, society will get in your head and just tell you, okay, if you don't graduate from high school and if you don't graduate from college, you are a failure. And that is not the case. We want everyone to try and do their best and, you know, go to college and graduate. But for some, that's not really their calling. And also, what you find is with most, some graduates, you come out and you went through 4 years of school and you acquired a great education, but you've also acquired a whole lot of debt. And now you're looking for work because the government's going to come calling in about 6 months if you start making payments on that loan that you took out. So what I think that, you know, my passion right now as far as that's concerned is I want to go out and grab some folks within this particular demographic that are looking for a way to better themselves and not put themselves behind the eight ball because of deficits that they may have educationally and so on. I'm sure right now you know that folks are out here protesting and picketing and doing all these things to get $15 an hour to be in food service, like at McDonald's and this, that, and the other. My thought is, you know what, that's a living wage for everybody, not just food service people, but that's pretty much what you need to be making regardless of what you do. But why not, instead of looking to make $15 an hour working for someone else, how about looking to you being the boss, owning your own, starting your own business from the ground up, you know, while you're young enough to work hard and make mistakes and recover from them or and so on. Or even if you're older and you want to go in a different direction, you always want to kind of get into the culinary arts, but you're always afraid of it. And you didn't want to go to a four-year university like Cordon Bleu or Sheik or whatever, or Kendall College and accrue a lot of debt. What we want to do is start a training program to give you exposure to all different facets of this food service industry. We want to train folks on how to do purchasing, how to do inventory, how to manage people, how to manage yourself, how to market your business. Because what you take from a food service setting, you can always take to another industry. So if you're successful here, you can take that somewhere else. Because the thing is, we can give you all the training in the world, but the biggest thing that you're going to need is you're going to need that fire in your belly, you're going to need that drive, and you're going to need to know what to do when things go wrong. You know, Mike Tyson said everybody has a plan until they get punched in the jaw. So we're going to try to help folks. When you get punched in the jaw, what do you do now? Do you, fold up and go home, or do you, take a couple more rounds and try to get it worked out? So on that piece, I just wanted to make sure that, we let people know that there are options for you if Plan A did not work, and Plan A being a traditional four-year university, getting a degree. There are a lot of jobs out here that you can get for skilled labor that are being outsourced to other people in other countries and that type of thing that we can take advantage of and immediately impact our situations and our community and our families and so on, because these jobs are paying you a $60,000 a year salary without a traditional college degree. So, enough on that.
Well, no, let's not quite move away from that yet. To give an answer to one of your questions is why not be the boss, I find two things that happened. One, of course, was my path, and I can speak to that on my own, and the other one is the path that I see some of my kids that I teach that they're on. A big problem within the minority, especially African-American culture, is a lack of information on how to be an entrepreneur. There are some that know and how to do it and can do it well, but the vast majority of kids, 17, 18 years old, what they're being taught is they're being taught from a family where no one's ever had a business. And sometimes I meet kids that no one else in the family has a high school diploma. And for them, they're fed a constant, you need to get a job and go sit down somewhere. You need to get a job because that's the only vision that is had within the family. They don't know how to be an entrepreneur, so they don't put that in the minds of their kids that, hey, you could own your own business. Their whole focus is blue collar, not white collar. We want you to get a job. And if it's a government job, that's even better because it's secured pension and benefits. So they look at things differently. And partially, I went through a little bit of that myself. My family was very union, blue collar, et cetera. Outside of the vast majority was my mom, who was into computers and was a programmer for a very long time. But she worked for a company, several. But it was always, I can take my degree and get a job. It was never, I can take my degree and open up my own whatever. And that takes a very different set of skills. And sometimes you have to overcome the naysayers that you live with in order to have a mindset that I can do it. I can have my blah, blah, blah. A lot of kids aren't taught that or supported in the way where they'll feel like, okay, my family's got my back. Even if this isn't successful, I still got plan B. So they never make ownership or entrepreneurship plan A, hardly ever. And that is a real obstacle to what we are doing. Agree?
Most definitely. And, you know, if anything, you want to find people who are like-minded, who have your back, because you would think that your biggest supporters and cheerleaders would be at home, but sometimes they want you to follow their path, not the path that you want to be on. So you have to really motivate yourself and be dedicated to what you think that you want to do with your life, because at the end of the day, if you don't enjoy what you do, you shouldn't do it.
Right.
And you should try to make another plan to get in that lane where you can enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
You know, I see folks every day.
What do you think about the notion of, okay, I believe two things. Parents can't give to their child the things that they don't have. So if their parent isn't mannerable, their child's not going to be mannerable. At the same time, as a parent, you're going to show your kids what you consider safe. Entrepreneurship a lot of times is considered highly risky. So you say to them, no, go get a government job, work for the post office, et cetera, because then I don't have to worry about you failing and being, you know, hungry or, you know, being put out of your place or whatever because your business folded.
Right. And, you know, having a transferable skill, always a great thing. I mean, it's a way to hedge your bet because maybe you're in a situation where you're making $15 an hour at a restaurant, but as we all know in this particular industry, restaurants come and go unless you're a chain like a McDonald's or something like that. But if you're working, so they close. And, you know, you can always, if you don't want to have a restaurant, you can always start a catering operation. In my food truck life, I see folks out there running around selling food out of coolers in the back of their SUV. Great food, but not licensed. You know, I'm not saying that's the route you can that you should go, but it is done, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to teach folks the right way to go out and get a sanitation license, to go out and take some classes and, you know, culinary, whether you want to be a sous chef or whether you just want to own a restaurant and that kind of thing. And the food truck situation is just booming right now. I get invitations all the time to come and go on food truck throwdowns and this, that, and the other. But you need to know when it's time for you to take those steps. And until you get your craft down and you perfect it, you don't want to just go out there on ego. You want to make sure that when you go out there and step forward, that you present yourself and your product and your skills in the best light possible, and you have to be wise when you do it. Because if you go out there and you have a misstep, people never remember the good thing that you do. They remember that one little screw-up.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so I know that you understand how that is. Because Elaine and I, we have an event coming up actually at the end of this week, you know, where people sought us out. We didn't go looking for this business. The host of this particular event looked for us to help them with their event because, as you know, they always tell you, your gift will make room for you without you doing anything except what you're good at. And if you serve people, you have a great product, great service delivery, you got a good work ethic, and you're easy to work with, people will seek you out. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about food, you know, is that, you know, I love cooking. I'll be on my grill in a little bit this afternoon because I love to cook. And people love to eat my food, and that's a great thing as well because I know that I put out a good product. People love to eat Elena's product. So that passion and just that love of what you do, I mean, you know, even if you don't make a king's ransom, it's worth it.
Agreed. Very much so. There were times where I didn't make a whole lot of money and had to find other ways to do it. But like you said, skills are transferable. And at one point, I worked for retail grocery stores because I was trying to foster a better work-life balance. My kids were young, or actually I was still having kids at that point. And having the ability to have a set schedule was more important to me than a bigger paycheck. So sacrifices were made and concessions were made. So it kind of worked out. But if I didn't think I had the skill set needed to be a department manager at a grocery store, if I only thought that the only thing I was ever good at is at this one set of skills at this one particular company, then, you know, you lose hope. When we had to go on strike with this particular company, there were so many people scared to death. Oh my God, where else am I going to work? How can this isn't going to go right? And I think it crippled us as a group because they were voting off of fear. And of course, management of the chain of grocery stores was trying to foster more fear so that they could manipulate the vote into their advantage. But my whole thing, I kept telling everybody, if you've worked here for 10 years, let's say, or whatever, and you've been at this position that long with this company, why don't you think that you can take your ball and go home? There are other companies looking for the same type of people, and to walk down the street and talk to somebody else in the same industry, they just wouldn't do it. They were scared to death. And So now work-life balance is really an issue for most people in the food service industry. And you can get into some really big debates with people in regards to that. I have friends and family that don't understand the basics of our scheduling. Anytime people get off work and start looking for dinner, that's when we work. Or on Saturday and Sunday, when they want to kick back and have a party, that's when we work. Almost every single wedding I've ever been a part of has been a Saturday afternoon. So when we're doing all this prep and all this labor to get ready for these things is when we are doing the hardest part. So my schedule has never been easy, but it is what it needs to be. And I don't think a lot of people outside of our industry get that really. What was an instance where your schedule to another company was so bad that, you know, some stuff in your personal life got neglected?
Well, I've been in situations where the establishment that I was working with at the time, I was the office manager, the catering manager, the cop on the beat, and what have you. We were blessed enough to have an opportunity to work at the Taste of Chicago. That is a monster responsibility in unto itself because you have to have a system and a plan in place, not just for the stocking and restocking of your product, but for the delivery of the product, the cooking, and all the other things that kind of go into it. But Taste of Chicago is in the summertime. It's in the daytime. It's in the nighttime. And it's not like you just get there and the taste opens at 9 and you just walk in at 9 and open up. You got to be there at 0:30 in the morning getting ready. So the product is ready to go when the gates open. And when the taste is over at 9, you don't just walk out because you got to break down and you got to clean up and get ready to do the same thing the next day. So your personal life is put to the wayside because this is what you do. You know, it's not like if you're in the military, you know, and they say, hey, we need you to get on a plane and there's a situation and you need to, you know, be there. You don't make cornflakes for a living. You're in the military. That's your job. You got to go. So in this situation, you have to have a mindset of it comes with the territory. And a lot of times people get into this industry for the wrong reasons. They want to be the next celebrity chef or they want to make food that they like. Magic Johnson came out to my church a couple of years ago, and he was talking about his business successes and failures. One of the failures that he had in business was a clothing store. And he told the story about he opened his clothing store, and he liked all the stuff, and the buyers that he was talking to, oh, they gave him everything that he wanted. And it failed because he stocked clothes that he liked, not the clothes that the public liked.
Yeah.
And in this industry, you find people that don't want to change the flavor profile of what they're doing because, well, that's how I like it. But you're not selling the food to yourself. You have to alter and, you know, offer a product that the public wants if you want to stay in business. Now, if you want to go in business and just sell to yourself, go ahead. You won't be here long, but, you know, go ahead. But if you want to be in this business or any business alone, you have to really cater to what your audience is. And that just doesn't come by because, you know, your guy or your family say, oh, I love it when you make it that way. But if the public doesn't like it that way, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to force them to like your product because they can take their money elsewhere.
I got a prime example
of that. And, you know,
there's
a lot of things with big ego and little pockets.
Oh,
yeah. You got people with big egos and no money in their pockets, and they are so stubborn and they won't change. And you'll see a for sale sign or a closed for – in the restaurant business, whenever you see a sign that says closed for remodeling, they ain't coming back.
Yeah, that's a little trick of language. I got a good example of that. Many years back, I used to work at a city college, and I was the department – I was in the food service department. I was the catering and benefit coordinator, and I used to handle all my stuff pretty much by myself. And this one particular time, I was like, okay, I'm a little crunched for time. Can you, you know, help me out? This manager came over and they were helping us put things together, and I stopped him. I'm like, excuse me, what are you doing? He was like, well, I'm putting the sandwich tray together. I said, why are you buttering the bread? He's like, we always do that in Ohio. I'm like, no, baby, this is Chicago. And these itty bitty ladies that I'm about to cater to are all watching their diet. You're about to sink me. And then sure enough, maybe 2 weeks later, one of the orders was on the buffet, was Italian beef for sandwiches, and he didn't order any hot peppers. I was like, oh my God, you can't do that. This is Chicago. You need to know how we eat here, not what you're used to doing. And it was just more than a little problem. Well, you know, I had no peppers, no sweet, no hot, nothing. Oh, my God. You're making my day horrible. Did I lose you?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, there you are. I'm a little paranoid. I don't want to lose you. I'm a little paranoid because sometimes it'll take my callers and just dump them out, and I don't particularly care for that. So, yeah, knowing your audience is a big part of what's going on, and also understanding the industry. A lot of people have a degree in English and find out that, you know, jobs aren't readily available for their talent and decide to, well, I used to, you know, cocktail waitress when I was, you know, 22, 23 years old. I'll just open up a bar or a restaurant. And you go, that's not how this works. That's not how you're going to be successful. And, you know, some people, I swear, are blessed with investors to their idea of what things should be. So they're given this money to open a restaurant and they don't have the ability to make it work. And I'm just like, why are you so blessed to have all this gugobs of money and somebody supporting this idea? And neither one of you have a clue as to what the customer in that city really wants to eat and be a part of. So that's my pet peeve. I'm going to get off that soap opera right now. All right. So we're in Chicago, and Chicago has a very unique food relationship. And I want to talk to that a little bit later. But before we get there, I ask everybody that comes on this show at least this one question. Maurice, what is the first food memory that you can relate to?
Ooh. You mean in life or in business?
Yeah. What's your first earliest food memory?
First earliest food memory would probably be I had to be about four or something like that. And
okay.
We were having a holiday dinner at my house, and I remember that, you're a shorty. And I just remember walking in the kitchen behind my mom and had all my aunts and my grandmothers and all in there, and they were cooking. And, you know, in those days, you know, they didn't just rush the kids out of the kitchen. They let you sit down and let you learn something. They let you stir some batter, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that is my earliest food memory of just really just sitting in the kitchen with my mom, my grandmothers, and so on, while they cooked and talked and tasted and everything. And, you know, that's my earliest food memory.
Yeah, that's a common one. And it's very much a part of why I named this show and the blog, the written blog that I have, Giant Fork and Spoon, because we grew up in an era, especially in the 70s, you saw many versions of that wall art of the big giant fork and the big giant spoon in a lot of homes, like, you know, across the board. If your mom and dad didn't have one, your aunties did. And so it was always like a touchstone to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember going over so-and-so's house and the food was really good. And I remember she got a big wooden fork and spoon. I went over here to so-and-so's house, they get a big metal fork and spoon. It was just something that people gravitated to for whatever reason. And it was kind of ubiquitous and a little bit strange. I never really understood what the phenomenon was about, but I always did remember, usually it meant I was going to have a good meal.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I also think about, not just for when things were at my house, but like we would go down south to my aunt, my other grandmother, and what she would find is they didn't have the most high-tech kitchens. You know, they weren't having stainless steel and electric burners and all this kind of thing. They would have little small rinky-dink whatevers, but they would do their business. And the thing is, when you would come down there, you would think that she was cooking for 100 people, and it would just be about maybe 10 or 12. Thing was fresh. Everything was done from scratch. There were no boxes in the garbage cans from Pillsbury or whatever. Really, I never had Jiffy cornbread until I was like in high school and I went to somebody else's house.
Okay.
I mean, because that's just, you know, who, you know, I grew up with, you know, they did everything from scratch. So now, you know, it gives you an appreciation because you know what good food tastes like. And your palate, you know, if you've gone to the finest restaurants in the world or work, and if it's not good, it's not good. So, you know, you have to, you can taste the love in people's food. I'll put it like that.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. My great grandmother, I would go down to Virginia for summers with my grandparents, and she had a wood burning stove. And like, even after we bought her an electric one, nope, didn't like it. You know, nope, don't know how to work it. But every morning it was, you know, go to the wood pile. And that was amazing to me. Like, are you kidding? No. And the whole house would be warm just from that stove. And everything was made on that stove. It was incredible. Fortunately, in some cases, and unfortunately, in other cases, we both now live in Chicago. And the news and the reputation of Chicago as a city is undergoing a lot of negativity based upon violence and some other issues. My biggest problem with Chicago is the legislation, especially when you're talking about things that impact my industry. And for several years, you were talking about how, you know, you got this food truck and you're working it. We as a city were very late coming onto the scene for that because the legislation that was in place that governed food service business was so strict that we as a group, the unions of food service, had to go to court with the city because it wasn't possible the way they wrote the legislature. New York had them, LA had them, I'm sure Las Vegas had them way before we did. and you will see talking to other people, like my brother's in Atlanta, and when we talk about how to get open, he's like, we don't have to go through that. We don't have to go through that. And I'm like, what? And it's amazing to me. How do you feel about Crook County as we live and breathe in it?
It is not for the faint of heart or the faint of spirit. Trying to do business in Cook County, or even specifically the city of Chicago, is an exercise sometimes in futility. You know, this is a city of big shoulders and this, that, and the other, but the bureaucracy is deep here. And they make it very difficult for you to obtain your licenses. Lord help you if you want a liquor license.
Oh,
you
my
know,
gosh.
Those kind of things. So, you know, and for future ventures, as you know, we've looked in like the south suburbs or, you know, western suburbs to start our business, because it's just so much easier for you to get a business up and running without all the exorbitant fees and this, that, and the other. It's a little less regulated as far as that's concerned, but the standards as far as food safety and sanitation are still there, but it makes it more attractive for businesses to open up. And, you know, a lot of times business owners in these restaurants, they look at having a freestanding location with a dining room and so on, because they want to get to the Taste of Chicago, or they want to get a spot out at one of the airports, which is a totally different animal as far as having a firm and high-functioning system. And if you look at it, if you are able to get that opportunity in one of these major airports, there's a guy with a popcorn stand out in Midway Airport that's making $1 million a year selling popcorn, which tells you what kind of money is being made for the restaurants that you see. Because if you go to the airport, you know, a crappy sandwich is $9.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, I
Same
mean, there is money that you made.
$7 beer to go, you know, you're sitting in to watch baseball, it's $7 for beer, you know, $3 mm-hmm. for a pretzel. You're like, what the heck?
And, you know, the regulations that the city of Chicago have, I mean, I understand that they're looking at the public interest, but there are a lot of things that are just for the interest of the city, in my opinion, you know, as far as how
agree.
They feed you to death, you know. And then you see restaurants, you know, established, ancient, you know, historical Chicago establishments, you know, who still have city code violations and are open every day. You know,
yeah.
that kind of thing. So yeah. it just depends on sometimes the palms that you grease, or some folks just get luckier. And, you know, but the game is set up for you to fail, in my opinion, sometimes as far as what they put you through.
Yeah, I would agree. There, you know, it's a concept of barriers, entrance barriers to the marketplace. And the government, more so than the individuals in the marketplace, have a lot to do with how easy or difficult it is for someone to create a startup and actually get up and running. And it's done methodically, I believe. And a lot of which, you know, grease and palms, knowing who, what, when, where, is a huge issue. And it's really not pleasant. I understand from one aspect that you don't want everybody that has three pots and a cupcake tin to enter into the, you know, the marketplace and undercut your sales. However, at the same time, the flip side of that is what we're talking about, the raising of minimum wage here in the city. The cost of living here dictates that we need to provide a higher income for the vast majority of the workers that work here at McDonald's and Wendy's and whatever. And a lot of people don't understand what the legislation was about. It's a old legislation put into place by Roosevelt. And the concept was that a person working a job 40 hours a week and more should be able to, by themselves, support them, a spouse, and at least one kid. That was why it had to be the minimum, because beyond that, you force families not to be able to afford, you know, children at all. So he put legislation in place. You cannot pay them next to nothing and get fat off of the business and they don't have a share in that. I've heard a lot of small businesses lately, small business owners, really upset about raising the minimum wage. And they have this concept of, well, how am I supposed to have people working for me? Da, da, da. You're going to force me to either close my doors or you're going to force me to reduce my manpower because I'm not going to be able to afford anybody. And I don't really think that's true. What, let's see, we've got another 10 minutes. Give us your opinion on that. And I'll say one more time, the guest call-in number is 657-383-0717. Tell us how you're feeling about that, Mr. Miles.
Well, case in point, if we're going to, say, a case study. Are you getting the echo? Anyway, there was a Brazilian steakhouse here in Chicago, very successful, called Brazos. They were making money hand over fist, and they got into a situation, labor dispute-wise, I think it was, and overnight, they were out of business.
Wow.
Now, this wasn't the city that shut them down. This was their, their mismanagement of that opportunity. Now, if you look downtown, and just say in the Loop, or say the near North Side, Magic Mile area, look at all the restaurants that are staples in that area. The Rock and Roll McDonald's, Rainforest Cafe, Weber Grill. I mean, Lou Malnati's, Pizzeria Uno, Duet, all these different organizations. What are they doing that they stay in business that the new up-and-coming restaurants with similar cuisine don't do? How are they able to make it and the other folks don't? All things being equal, service delivery, product, and so on. Why are these old-school, folks still able to make it and the new guys don't? I think that, it's whose palms are being greased. If the city inspector comes by my place on a much higher frequency than he comes to yours, is that because I run a dirty restaurant or you're looking for a reason to shut me down? Kind of thing. Because in this city, you have to play the game. And if the people from Brazos or the people from the city are listening, whatever, it's true. You have to play the game.
Yeah, and I've always been a person who has, I don't like politics. I especially don't like interpersonal politics because then you're not doing business. You're running a popularity contest at that point.
Right, most definitely. And you're working for the city. You work at, Rahm Emanuel doesn't give a damn about what you do at your restaurant or what have you, but, there's some bureaucrat within the city government, and he may be a low-level manager, but he might just have you and your business by the short and curlies because he has authority over that particular function that affects your business.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I've seen there are some Whitney Young alums that had Club Nouveau down there in River North?
Uh-huh.
They went through hell always. I mean, with the tenants in the area saying that there were, bad people in the neighborhood and we don't want them there. And I don't even know if they're still in business or not, but they were trying to shut them down for no other reason that it was a business of color. So let's put that out there. Sometimes it's not the color green, it's the color of your skin that will get you shut down in the city. You know, where they set the game up, they don't want you to succeed, but they'll take all your money for your fees and your licenses and your insurances and this, that, and the other, let you get in business, and then do everything to shut you down so you lose your investment.
Yeah, I can easily recall an article about similar circumstances when Jokes for Notes had a problem in the Bronzeville area and wanted to change the location. They ran into that, and it the remodel of the space was done, the licensing, the inspections, mm-hmm. all of that stuff was done. The neighbors, they never got the door open that one day because the neighbors threw fits. You're going to bring this population down for a comedy festival or see the, you know, see a comic, and we don't want that. It happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's just recent.
But
not,
yet you still, you
year.
Walk down, the, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, okay. Every year we find out, you know, the list comes out of the best cities to live in, the best cities to have, you know, and we are frequently listed as the most segregated city in America.
Mm-hmm.
So there's maybe
but
some.
But look at how we spend our money, though.
Yeah, it, very different.
Okay, not to just, you know, go all Trump on you or whatever, but just looking at how we spend money in this city. A dollar in Chinatown will circulate about six times before it leaves Chinatown to go somewhere else to spend their money.
Uh-huh.
Now, a dollar in an African-American neighborhood might circulate one to two times, meaning that you go to a black-owned business in your neighborhood before you're running out to, like, say, the Walmarts or the Targets or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That's what is killing the small minority business owner, is that the minorities don't take care of themselves. And I shouldn't say minorities. Black folks don't take care of black folks. You know, if you are in business and you're a black business owner, you'll get people of your own race and color coming in there, and they want a discount.
Surely.
Just because.
And I think the only industry that does not see a lot of that is in beauty, because
mm-hmm.
black women will not patronize a white beautician. But at the same time, they don't want to pay, in a lot of cases, what it takes to keep that location open and viable.
Mm-hmm.
We got about 3 minutes.
Black women, we got 3 minutes?
Yeah, 3 minutes.
One more stigma that's out there is that the product is different, because if I, as a black man, and I'm selling ice, and there is a white guy or an Asian guy or whatever guy sitting next to me, for some reason they're going to think his ice is colder, and they'll pay more for his ice than they will for mine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, we kill ourselves. But like I say, the only way that you make things change is you make things change. So somebody has got to stay at the forefront and try to do what they can do to change perceptions and everything. So, and I think that, you know, we're among those folks that are trying to do that.
Hopefully. I want to be on the right side of that fight, not the worst side of that fight. And reaching to teach 6th through 8th graders and high school students, hopefully I'm positioned exactly where I need to be and be able to reach even just one. My kids, like we talked about earlier, my kids have huge obstacles socially, educationally, and perception-wise. You know, they aren't as situated mentally and fortified or supported like we were when we were going to school. There was never the proposition of doubt in the language at my house. It was always, when you go to college, not if, never that. And so I think it raised the bar to whatever. All right, we got 90 seconds or so. Give us your last little bit of the day, Mr. Miles.
60 seconds.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me on. It's been a great, you know, exchange of information and so on. And I look forward to being on in the future.
Absolutely.
I just want everyone to know, Cake by Elena is her business. Please patronize her. You can find her on the interweb. And when we come back out here soon with our new business venture, we definitely hope to earn your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love my customers. I love what I do. Producing cakes, it is very seldom that the cake is produced for something sad. Does happen. I've done a few repasses, but most of the time my items end up being a central high note to some of the best. It's really great. Wedding, birthday, that graduation, I always get to be a little part of their happiness. So So thanks for listening. Please hit the button to follow us. We love you guys. Good afternoon.
Rest in peace, Prince.
Amen.